Well, both conference final series are underway as we record this Thursday. And Sean, I did the math. 14 goals in game one of the Western Conference final, 8 in game one of the Eastern Conference final. That's 22 goals. That's 11 goals per game. That's not playoff hockey that we're used to, Sean, but I can get used to this.
Dan, I'm gobsmacked.
That you could, gobsmacked. That I can do math?
That you could do all that math, especially this early in the morning, but you probably have a calculator or an abacus or something. I don't know what you got going on that I can't see. There's not enough fingers. You got to 11, so you would have to go to toes. So I'm thinking maybe an abacus, but no, it's crazy. It's 1980s playoff hockey. It's the playoff hockey that I grew up on. I expect all the goalies to stand up and try and kick everything out instead of going down and going into the butterfly. And it's this whole alternate universe. But of course, sign me up, man. It's great. Like that game one in Colorado, after having seen them play in the first two rounds, like just to see the goals go right. And you knew even when it was 6-3, like you're not turning off the TV because Edmonton might not come back, and they didn't come back, but they're going to come close and they're going to make it interesting. And it was as entertaining as anything I've seen in a long time.
It's wild. Well, that's the Wild West, but I mean, it's just wild to think that this is playoff hockey, but maybe this is playoff hockey that we will be getting for a long time now. The league, the talent in the league is so great right now. Young players in the league come in and they say, yeah, I'm going to do this too. I'm going to score. Forget you. Like I'm going to take over right now, you know, and we're seeing this barrage of offense. And even if the goalies are good, we're still seeing a barrage of offense. You know what I mean? Like Andrei Vasilevskiy gave up 6 in game one against the Rangers. And now, okay, he hadn't played in 9 days. I get that. There was a little rust, but the Rangers doubled the amount that the Florida Panthers scored in 4 games against Andrei Vasilevskiy. They've got 3 goals in 4 games. The Rangers got 6 in 1. And we're looking at 6.45 goals per game right now in the Stanley Cup playoffs to date. As we speak Thursday morning, game 2 of the Western Conference Final is tonight. 6.45. That's the most we've seen since it was 6.84 in 1993. And if you actually look at it, you know, by ranking in a normal playoffs, and normal, I say, you know, 50 or more games had been played, and I'm not going back to like 1917, 18 or whatever it is. It's the 12th most goals per game as currently all time. And it's offense that I didn't think we were going to be seeing like this in the playoffs, Sean. Like I thought we would see good offense. We saw it all regular season, but it's an uptick from what we saw in the playoffs. And it's surprising to me that it's gotten that way. Now, I will say this. Look, in the Western Conference Final, you got to have some goaltending, right? Like there's got to be some goaltending eventually in the Western Conference Final. And I think we'll see it. You got to be – Wayne Gretzky's right. They got to play a little bit of defense. But even if they do, we could still see 5 games of 5-3, 5-4, 6-4, 7-5, just because the talent is so great.
When you were prepping me for this, you did not tell me this was going to be a statistics seminar. I'm having PTSD. I failed statistics or dropped it 5 times in college. All right. So I don't know about the numbers, but I know 2 things. I know we're living in a really weird world when the greatest offensive player in the history of mankind, who actually professed himself as the greatest offensive player in the history of mankind, which he never does, which was completely shocking. And Wayne Gretzky says, how about mixing in a little defense? Right. So you're in an alternate universe already. And then, you know, it's not even the goals. It's the players who are scoring the goals, right? Like, it's just, it's crazy. You know, McDavid is doing McDavid things and McKinnon's doing McKinnon things, but Cogliano scoring, Darren Helm scoring, everybody's getting in line to score. And I think, you know, or I hope the NHL is such a copycat league that I hope GMs are watching and saying, you know what? We can entertain. And we can win. And that's a game changer, because you think about all the times in the playoffs where a team has come in and has that really sound defensive identity, you know, and they run to the conference final, they run to the Stanley Cup final, And then all the other GMs are sitting there and they're saying, well, that's what we got to do. We don't have the high-end talent that these other teams have. We're going to have to grind it out and shut these teams down. And now maybe some GMs are looking and saying, you can do it both ways. You can run and gun and you can win. And that's a complete game changer.
And we're going to talk a lot about this. We spoke with Joe Micheletti, who's doing national radio on Sports USA National Radio. He's calling the Eastern Conference Final with John Forslund. So we talked with Joe about a lot of what's going on in the playoffs. That interview will come up in a little while. Sean, I wanted to go specific to a few players. And we did a thing. It's up on NHL.com now. The Super 16, our newest Super 16, is the ranking the 16 best players that are still playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And look, Connor McDavid was number one. That's not surprising. Leon Draisaitl was two. Vasilevsky was three. McKinnon four. And Shesterkin five. Six was Cale Makar. Is Cale Makar a top five player in the National Hockey League right now?
A player or defenseman?
Player.
Player.
Top five player. Well, let's see. Let's separate the goalies. Okay. Let's
top five skater.
Top five skater. Because he would be on our list of players still playing in the league. And I know he's probably not going to win the Norris, and I think Roman Josi deserves it, right? But I watch him play, Sean, and I'm like, there's nothing this guy can't do. He is electrifying offensively. He is one of the he's the best. He might be the best skating defenseman that there is in the game. I can't say he's the best skater in the game because he's playing against the best skater in the game. And the second best skater in the game is probably on his team, number 29, Nathan MacKinnon. But he's right up there too. He's smooth. He's physical. Doesn't shy away. He's got a terrific shot. And really, I mean, just as strong defensively as you could ask anybody to be.
Yeah, you know, and there's been a lot of comparisons in the East with Adam Fox playing for the Rangers compared to Brian Leetch, who I was fortunate enough to cover for a majority of his career. And, you know, the 94 playoffs remains one of the greatest performances I've ever seen by any player, regardless of position. But for defensemen, what Brian Leetch did that year was unbelievable. And to me, Cale Makar is the closest approximation of Brian Leetch in the fact that he completely controls the game for the Colorado Avalanche. He dictates how they're going to play. If they're going to attack, he's going to lead the attack. If they're going to slow down, he's going to slow down. He has this uncanny ability to read exactly what the team needs and to play at almost any speed, and do the things that they need to get out of their own end. And he's like a quarterback, like not a power play quarterback, but like a quarterback. He's deciding how they're going to go down the field to mix metaphors, how they're going to go down the ice. And then he can score like a forward, and there's no other defense as good as Adam Fox is, and he scored some big goals in the playoffs. He is not a scoring defenseman like Cale Makar is to me. So he's on the cusp of the five, right? He's six for us, but there's a lot of players, a lot of skaters that are out of this list.
Two of them are goalies at the top ahead of him, so he's really
four. But there's guys that have been eliminated. There's guys,
yes, of course,
that haven't. That didn't make the playoffs. So I think pushing into the top five might be difficult, but he is beyond elite. And the only thing I will say is there were a couple of times in game one where he got lost in his own end. And that's the only thing you worry about. Like there was that one play and I forget who it was, you know, the puck came right across home plate and he was befuddled. Yeah. As it landed on a stick for an easy one-timer. And look, that's going to happen against a team like Edmonton who can zip the puck around like nobody's business. And you're all tied up with wondering what McDavid's doing and wondering what Draisaitl's doing. So I understand it. And it's a minor knock compared to what he provides offensively.
Well, yeah, it is a minor knock, but I mean, both of those teams in the Western Conference Final can make your head spin. As good as you are, right? I mean, they can turn defensemen around and have their heads spinning around in all different directions because of how fast they move the puck and how good they are. I've just been so impressed with his ability, with Makar's ability to just continue to raise his game, you know? He had a dominant first round against Nashville. Didn't dominate on the score sheet against St. Louis, but he was good. You know, like he was good. And that was a different series, right? I mean, you covered. That was a totally different series. And to be honest with you, just to switch points a little bit, That's the type of series to me. Watching the Avalanche be able to win that series kind of tells me that they can win in any type of way, right? If they're going to get past Edmonton here, I know they're going to be facing a different type. They're obviously going to be facing the best goalie that they have faced in the playoffs, no matter who. If they get to the Stanley Cup final, whether it's Shesterkin or Andre Vasilevsky, to be the best goalie they faced. Both the Lightning and the Rangers can open it up and prefer that a little bit more than a lockdown. They're not snarly, tough teams like the Blues, but the way the Colorado Avalanche showed, what they showed me in that series is, you want to win a wide open game? Fine, we can do that. You want to win a snarly, tough game? Fine, we can do that. And that's a thing that's new for the Colorado Avalanche. Like that's something that's different. That's a growth in their game that we're seeing this year. You covered them a lot. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, they reimagined their bottom six and made it that way a little more, you know, a little more snarl, some experience, some ability to score. You've seen it, you know, Darren Helm gets the game, the right. series winner against St. Louis. Cogliano scored some big goals for them, you know, so and then even their big guys are playing with a little bit more of a snarl. I just think, you know, I think MacKinnon said it before the playoffs start, like, I'm tired of not winning anything. Like, I've been in this league long enough. And I'll tell you what, you know, you keep bringing up 93 and that's the last time that there's been this many goals scored. That's the first playoff I ever covered. And so we're at almost 20 years now of me, 30 years 30. Of me. See, again, I told you, I don't do math, dude.
Wow.
I don't do math. Wow. And I'm trying to make myself 10 years younger.
Yeah.
But 30 years of me covering the playoffs, and there's probably five times, and three of them happened in the first couple of years when I covered the playoffs because I was so excited to be covering hockey. I couldn't control myself, and now I'm a jaded old man. There's very few times when I literally get out of my seat and say, oh, my God. And Nathan MacKinnon in game five against the Blues,
yeah,
when he puts them ahead in the last 2 minutes of regulation, got me out of my seat. Oh, my God. Like, it was unbelievable. And that was a statement, and the rest of his team let him down. Lost that game, put themselves in a really bad position where they had to win game six, because if they're going back for game seven, oh, my God, it's going to be Armageddon in Denver. So, and players actually said afterwards, we let Nathan MacKinnon down. He put us on his back. It was the goal that ended a hat trick. Like, they should have slayed the dragon right there. And, you know, so I think it's almost mentally as much, you know, players like Landeskog and MacKinnon saying, this is it. Like, there's no more learning process. We've gotten our teeth kicked in three times. I don't want any more dental work. I want a party. So, and that's the vibe that this team has now.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about that goal. So I was in Raleigh when that game was being played. I was at dinner and I had the game on my phone. I'd left the restaurant and I was walking across the street back to the hotel. Big street, long, you know, like, takes a while to get across the street. I'm watching the game as I'm walking across the street and I see Nathan MacKinnon go end to end, and I literally stopped in the middle of the street. Thank God I had the little green guy telling me I could still go, because if not, I would have gotten hit by a car probably, because it literally made me stop dead in my tracks in the middle of the street when I watched him go end to end. And I could not believe, when I got back to my hotel room, I could not believe, as I watched the rest of that game, that they lost that game. I couldn't believe it, Sean. Like, how do you lose that game?
I don't know. Part of it's goaltending, right? I don't think Darcy Kuemper was good. In that game specifically, he gave up some really bad rebounds in the third period. They were up 3-1 and they couldn't lock it down. I've only seen Nathan MacKinnon live in a competitive game probably 10 times in my career. It was like he was in the Fast and the Furious. Like, he had this little nitrous button that he would just push and he would take off, and really good skaters would be left half a zone behind him. It was like watching the fastest skater competition when they just get that head of speed, no puck on the stick. The fact that he was doing that with a puck on his stick, like, to me, breathtaking.
Yeah. We were talking about it in the series in Carolina between the Rangers and Hurricanes, and we were all saying there's only one other player that can in the world that can make that play, can do that. And now they're playing against each other. you know, in the Western Conference Finals. So it's going to be great. Before we get to Joe Micheletti, who's our guest this week, he's doing radio, Sports USA National Radio for the Eastern Conference Final, calling the games with John Forslund. Sean, let's quickly switch it to the East Final. I was there at Madison Square Garden. The Rangers come out. I thought the first period was where they had to take them. They did a really good job in the first period, but it was even. And then I thought that, you know, the Rangers kept pushing, and that game one was key because you're talking about Tampa Bay coming off of a long break. I'm not, and we'll talk to Joe Micheletti about this a little bit too. I'm not 100% sure where this goes from here, but I know that the Lightning are going to rebound. I know they're going to be better, and that rust is off of them now. So I was impressed with the Rangers. I liked the fact that after the game, the Lightning players said, no, let's give some credit. And John Cooper did too. Let's give some credit to what the Rangers were able to do tonight. Right. But I still expect this to be a long series. Where it goes, I'm not 100% sure, because the Rangers continue to convince me that they might be, that this might be just one of those magical runs, you know, like it, a little bit unexpected and a little bit of a magic right now. But this also, Sean, is the first time that they've led in a series. They have used this comeback ability, this resiliency, this us against the world thing for the entire playoffs, really for the entire series, for the entire season. Now they got a 1-0 lead in the series. Now they're being chased. It's a little bit different for them.
Yeah, no. And they're playing in Fort Never Quit. So
they got Fort that going Never for Quit.
You like that?
I like that.
I just made that up.
By the way, you know what? I tweeted last night after the Lightning tied it 2-2. No quit in TB either.
Yeah.
And then they got hammered right after that.
Well, look, they lost their legs.
Yeah.
I think, you know, 8 days is a long time to be off. They tried everything in their power to replicate playoff hockey. And we all know you can't replicate playoff hockey. And while rest is nice, it comes at a price, and I think that price was paid in the third period. Look, the Toronto Maple Leafs were feeling pretty good about themselves in the first round, and you know, all the champs are on the ropes, and we all know what happened there, right? This is a really proud team. That's a really proud goalie. I don't think Andrei Vasilevsky is going to play to that level for the rest of the series. So, you know, I think there's a long way to go, but I am impressed with the Rangers, and I agree with this destiny thing, right? You need breaks to get deep in a playoffs. You need breaks, or to not get deep in a playoffs, you need bad breaks. Like, I think the Blues could have won that last series if Binnington doesn't get hurt. Like, mm-hmm. That's a bad break, right? And the Rangers have gotten good breaks. They've played Louis Domingue. They've played, Antti Raanta, who is the backup, and then the third string goalie in a series deciding game. Braden Point's hurt in this series. Like, you need those things to happen. But not only do you need those things to happen, but then you need to take advantage of them. And you know, watching the Rangers play in game one, the stage wasn't too big for them. And I think that's a huge thing. And part of it might just be youth, right? Like the stupidity of being young and not understanding that these moments don't come along and they have to be grasped, because you know, this whole argument that the Rangers fans have used since the playoffs started, every time they've been in a little bit of trouble, we're here too early, we're playing with house money, blah 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 blah, like, that's a nice coping mechanism. It's a bunch of crap. Like, you're not playing with house money. You're in the final four. You were in the final eight. Like, either you belong or you don't. You can't straddle that fence, and you can't, when things go bad, say, oh, we don't really belong here, and we're having fun and we're getting seasoned, and then things go well, and oh, we're a team of destiny. We're going to, like, you're one or the other, right? You don't belong or you belong, and you can't use youth. You can't use, we don't belong here. You can't use any of that. Now, if you don't get it done, you lost.
I think back to our interview last week with Ryan Callahan, when he was talking about the Lightning and team he was on in 2015, and they went up against the Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup final. And they were like, that was the team of destiny, right? That Lightning team, they were, Cooper was there. It was just their first run. And he said, you know, we got up and we were feeling great. We couldn't handle the highs and lows. Whereas the Blackhawks were the champs two times already. They were able to handle it. They understood with a very even keel. That's going to be the challenge here for the Rangers. This is exactly that, right? They're playing up against the champs. They just won game one. They're feeling great. Can you handle the high? Can you stay even, right? And look, I'll give them credit. They've been able to do that this playoff run, but they have been able to do that because their backs have been against the wall, so to speak, for almost the entire playoff run. And now they're not. So it's going to be interesting. But anyway, we've waited long enough. We teased it a couple of times. We talked to Joe Micheletti, Sports USA National Radio. He's calling the Eastern Conference Final with John Forslund. Here is that interview with Joe Micheletti. Joe, thanks so much for joining us. So we know the Rangers took game one, and they took it in a pretty dominant fashion, 6-2. You were there calling the game on the radio. And now where do you think this goes from here? You know, we obviously, you know, the rust thing for the Tampa, how long they were off. The Rangers have been kind of rolling through, playing every other day. Game one's done. That rust, if they had it, it should be gone. Where do you think this goes from here, Joe?
Well, I'll just say this. It'll be different because the other thing I think that we have to take into account is that every series is different. So it's not just the fact that Tampa Bay didn't play for 9 days and the Rangers had one day of rest and there was that factor. But when they played that first game, you know, there's a realization that, wait a second, this is a little bit different. So there's that feeling out period of at least how that game is going to be played. And so when I looked at that, you know, that game last night, I thought Tampa Bay in the first period, they just kept getting better and better and better. And Igor Shesterkin, you know, was able to keep the Rangers and keep that game tied going into the second period. And then it looked to me like the Rangers, if they got more of their legs, okay, that might have been one thing. But I think they realized that this was a different game than what they had played in the previous seven against this Carolina team that just never gives you any room. It's just pressure, pressure, pressure. And so I think the Rangers realized, listen, we have a little bit more time to make plays. If we get more aggressive, we'll get the puck in deep. We can make more plays. And so to me, it was a much different game. And I think both teams adjusted to it. And the Rangers in particular in the second period took over.
You've watched the Rangers a lot, obviously, and there's a pretty big sample size now in the playoffs. Is this something against what's going to be at least one elite team, if not two, if they advance? Is this a style that they can safely play against elite teams? Like, they gave up 36 shots and a lot of them were high danger chances, especially in the first two periods. They've survived it so far. Can they continue to do it?
You know, Sean, there was this thought process that when you watch this team play at the beginning of the season, those shots weren't 35, 36, 37. They were 42, 43, 44, 45. And so it was a period of time for the Rangers where new coaching staff, some new players, a new system, and they're trying to adapt to all that and find their game as a group. While all that was going on, Igor Shesterkin was winning games on his own. And so over the course of the season, there's no question that the team obviously got much better. Their systems got to a point at least where they knew what they were supposed to be doing. They made adjustments along the way. And then you saw the growth of young players and that whole type of growth period over the course of the year. But the one thing that kind of remained the same, that this team never became a team where they were going to allow 25 shots a game. You know, they weren't going to be Carolina, you know, where it was 25, 28 shots, and that's all they were going to allow. It was almost always in the 30s. So you just kind of got used to this team giving up 35 shots, give or take a few, and then have your goalie play well for you. And then down on the other end, they became a very high-scoring team. So I guess that's a long answer to your question, Sean, but I would say yes, they can continue to play that way and give up that many shots and still win.
Well, and especially when you have the goalie who can make all those saves. I mean, he's been right. That, you know, he's been that good. And it is, Joe, I mean, it is remarkable when you think about goaltending for the New York Rangers. You know, you go from Mike Richter with a small little window of a break to Henrik Lundqvist straight into Igor Shesterkin. It's goaltending riches that this organization has had. And, you know, when you look at Igor now, he seems to me that like little hiccup he had against the Penguins in games 3 and 4 on the road there, that actually might have been the best thing for him, because A, it got him motivated and really understanding the series, you know, what playoff hockey can do to you. And it got him a little bit of a mental break. And that's what Gerard Gallant has talked about. I'm curious, do you feel the same way that he, it's almost like in hindsight now, that was maybe the best thing that happened to Igor Shesterkin in the playoffs?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Dan. And I'll take it one step further. If we agree that that mental break, because he got pulled in both those games in Pittsburgh, was because of this new experience for him. And I don't think there's any question that he has never experienced 18,000 people screaming at him the way the Pittsburgh fans did. I think that was all new, and especially the way Pittsburgh was playing. But add to that the fact that those were probably the two worst games that the Rangers have played. I think if we go back to game one or two in Pittsburgh, I think four of the six goals he allowed were all deflected. So the team was terrible in front of him. He was dealing with this new phenomenon of these fans just screaming at him like he's never had to deal with before. And so I totally agree with you that this was all part of his growing process as well. And we've talked about, you know, the kid line and some of these other players, even Adam Fox at 24 hadn't played a playoff game before. So, but this was all new for Igor as well. And I totally agree with you. I think that he went through that experience. The team was terrible. So the team knew that they had to play better. And then the tutelage of Benoit Allaire, the great goaltending coach of the Rangers, who's helped so many goaltenders throughout this process that you talked about. I think the fact that he was there for Igor to lean on, and then you take into account that Igor has always been this cool, calm customer. And I think that he was able to, you know, digest all that, think about it, talk to Benoit, team got a little bit better, and then he found his game again. And in particular, that, you know, in game six, going back to Pittsburgh, I think he proved to himself that I can handle this. I can do this.
You've been around the Rangers a long time. And so I want to ask you this question. We've discussed this in the office a couple of times. Is Chris Kreider an underrated all-time Ranger at this point?
That's a really good question, Sean. I would say this, that for many years, he was an overrated Ranger, right? Because every year it was, is this the year Chris Kreider is finally going to score 30 or 40 goals? Because he should be able to do it in his sleep. His size, his skating, his shot, you know, that whole thing. And he never got to that. So, you know, he had this moniker of, can he put together a full season and get to 30 or 40 goals, which should be relatively easy for him because of his talent level and his work ethic. And so now I think he went from there to now he blows by 30, blows through 40, and ends up with 52 in the regular season. And it's been one of those years for him where everything has worked. And I think it's a combination of a lot of factors. You have to give him so much credit for, you know, again, for everything he's worked on and how much he cares about the Rangers and his game. And then, you know, the coach and his teammates and that whole thing, you put it all together. And so now is he underrated? I think when you see have a year like that, because he's never been put up on a mantle with some of the great Ranger players of all time. And so I think now if you look at it, your point is probably well taken. You go, yeah, maybe he is a little bit. It just took him a long time to get to this point.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. It's taken probably too long for him to get to this point.
Right.
So, but he's there now. I wanted to flip it to Tampa, right? So a guy who really impressed me in game one and has really impressed me through the playoffs is Nick Paul. You mm-hmm. look at his stat line from game one. It doesn't look good. He's a -2. He only won 5 of 17 faceoffs. But to me, he was an impactful player in a game that got away from the Lightning.
Yeah.
And I think that he can be, you know, if they're going to go on and come back, and it's only one game down, but they're going to keep going on in these playoffs. That guy is one of the most important players. He's almost like their Barclay Goodrow from you know, the past 2 years. Maybe he was in a little bit better, maybe a more elevated role. Curious what you think of that guy, his game, Nick Paul. And do you agree that, you know, he has been maybe a more impactful player than we thought he would be for this team.
You know, Dan, prior to this year, prior to his trade, I should say, going from Ottawa to Tampa, you know, there was a lot of people that thought really highly of him because he was one of these players that didn't get a lot of attention and reached new heights with his game by work ethic and caring. And I remember having a conversation with Gerard Gallant early in the season about Nick Paul and how much he loved him as a player. He had him at the World Championships, and everybody probably knows the story for Team Canada last year. He didn't score a goal the entire tournament until he scores the overtime game winner. And people thought, what's he doing on the ice in overtime? He hasn't had a goal in the tournament. But Gerard Gallant saw something in him. And he loved it. He loved this kid. He loved his work ethic, loved the way he tried, loved how he stuck up for his teammates. And so now that's turned out to be a really important trade for Tampa, especially with the loss of Braden Point. And let's, you know, you can't replace Braden Point. And I think in a world where everybody is put in the proper spots in the lineup, Nick Paul is probably your third line center or third line wing. But now what he's done is he leads him in minutes, killing penalties. He's up there, of course, you know, playing in a top six role because of the fact that Braden Point is out. And he hasn't disappointed. It's just that he's not going to get to the level of Braden Point. Nobody will, because he's that good of a hockey player. But I agree with you. I remember talking to some of the Ottawa people as well early in the season. Because we know how young they are and they're in that rebuild. And I when I asked the question to some of those people of, you know, who do you really like of all these young kids? I mean, who's continued? And even though they had some others that were really high end players, Nick Paul was a name that continued to come up, and they continued to talk about that. This guy is someone that we really like and is really important player on this team.
Well, I'm shocked that Julien Brisebois was able to get a guy like that. He's never able to pull something like that off. So, Joe, let's switch series here. You know, you're talking about high-end skill. There's probably hasn't in a very long time been such a collection of high-end skill as we have in the Western Conference Final between the Colorado Avalanche and the Edmonton Oilers. But I would imagine after you watch game one, you were like, I don't want to watch this hockey anymore. This is no good.
Actually, I didn't think that way. I sat back and had a glass of wine and watched this and said, you know what, this is, I don't get tired of watching, you know, those kinds of players. You know, is it, and I know Wayne, you know, was talking about, you know, Edmonton or these teams have to think more defensively. I think he's right. But, you know, when he played on all those great teams in Edmonton, you know, I remember doing games and they'd get out shot 17-3 in the first period, but they'd lead 3-0 because they had Grant Fuhr back there. You know, this series the series that's going on now, especially with the goaltending situation in Colorado, you know, who's going to play, who's healthy, who's not. And, you know, and is Mike Smith, if he plays, is he going to be the one that finds his game, which it wouldn't surprise me because he's got that type of mentality. But you're not looking at the elite goaltending in that series. The elite goaltending is in the East. And so, you know, are we going to see a 3-2 game? I don't think so. I think they're all going to be 4-3, 5-4, maybe even higher, unless, you know, some of these goaltenders get hot. But as far as the skill level, I love it. I think it's great.
It is, Joe, but I got a question for you. So one of these two teams in the West is going to get to the Stanley Cup final. And obviously one of these two great goalies in the East is going to get there too. Can this style that Colorado and Edmonton play, do you think that can transfer over and they can continue to play it when one of these teams gets into the Stanley Cup final and they're playing against this, you know, these teams in the East that, look, there were 8 goals in game one, but I think that was a bit of an aberration. We're not expecting a lot of that type of offense. Again, Vasilevsky's not giving up 6 a lot, right?
Right.
Do you think that team in the West can continue on that path? Can they continue to score like this? Because they also don't have the goaltending. You know, like at some point, I get what you're saying, but at some point, they are going to have to play some defense and get some saves because the guy on the other side in the next round is going to be making a lot of them.
Yeah. You know, Dan, I think that over the course of history, and teams will tell you, and you've seen it, you've covered this game for so long, so have you, Sean, that teams know that as they move on in the playoffs, that they have to play better. And play better is just that phrase, but it's all encompassing. It's you have to make better plays. You have to make smarter plays. You have to defend better. Your goaltending still has to be very good. So in answer to your question, I think that whichever team moves on from the West, they're still going to have to be a better overall team when it gets to the next round. And if that means that they have to change their style, and John Cooper did that with Tampa Bay that last round against Florida. He got everyone to buy into, we have to, here's how we're going to defend. This is our system for defending against Florida. And I think those coaches, you know, in the West are going to have to do that as well. In fact, they're already doing it right now. They're you know, after looking at the last game, they're trying to decide how are we going to be better at trying to cut back on the chances. They're not going to cut back on all of them because, as you guys said, there's just too much talent out there, and the way they play that high-speed game and defense, you know, joining the rush and getting involved in the play. But they're still going to have to be better defensively than what they have been to this point, at least, you know, through the first game.
With so much talent there in the West, is there one player, and I guess maybe we throw Connor McDavid out because everybody's going to say Connor McDavid, and to be fair, we throw Nathan MacKinnon out from the Avalanche. Is there one player that you really, when you sit down with a glass of wine and you're like, I'm going to watch this game and I'm going to watch this guy because he entertains me to no end?
Well, you know, to me, there's a number of them because they do different things to have success. And whether it's, you know, whether it's Kadri, the way he plays, you know, his overall game, which I think is going to become more and more important in the series because, excuse me, he's got both offense and defense to his game and some grit to his game. So he's really, to me, going to be a key player for Colorado as this moves on. So I enjoy watching those types of players that have success, you know, doing different things, not just, you know, I mean, obviously Connor McDavid and Draisaitl and certainly MacKinnon and that group. But I just think as these go on, and we kind of saw this, you know, last night in the Ranger game too, aside from your top six, who are going to be the heroes? And generally, you know, those top six, a lot of times they start canceling each other out. And so you look at your third and fourth lines, as we've seen throughout history, and who is going to be the person or the player that's going to score the big goal or a couple of goals. And we've, you know, and Nick Paul was a good example of, you know, last series for them. He scores both goals in the game in Toronto in game seven, you know, to win it for them. So to me, it's not just those high end players, but it's, you know, there's somebody else, and, you know, and the way they play, whether it's, you know, scoring goals or on the front of the net, blocking shots. Barkley Goodrow is a good example. I love watching him play. He's not going to score a lot for you, but he'll score a big goal for you. So those types of players, as the series go on, I think become more and more important.
Joe, last one for me. So it's more of a big picture philosophical type question. We've had a season where we've had more offense than we've seen in, I think, a quarter century or around there. And the playoffs have been the same. In fact, it's an uptick, 6.45 goals per game now, which is the most since 6.84 in 93 in the playoffs. And if you look at it this way, where, you know, it's a continuation of the regular season, and it's not all power play stuff. The power play is about 20% in the playoffs, which is good. But, you know, still it's a lot of also even strength. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think we are now seeing this uptick in offense and playoff hockey having an uptick of offense when we assume a lot of the time it will go down in the playoffs, but it hasn't. In fact, it's gone up.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the growth of the game too. I mean, it's gradually we've been going that way now for a few years, And, you know, we revert back to the mean at times, and especially in the playoffs in years past. But I think that's where the game is going. I think it's the way it's coached. I think it's the way the game is called. You know, the penalties that are called now, the way you defend is different. You know, there's to me, there's just a lot of combinations. And you know what? I think the players overall are better throughout your lineup. I think you have more talented players throughout your lineup now than there have been in years past. And they're, you know, and a lot of them are young players that, you know, as we see, again, we use the Rangers as an example. I mean, that kid line are 20, 21 and 22 years old. They'd never played playoff hockey before. And they're able to adapt quickly, you know, and then get some confidence that they can play at this level, and they go out and play. And so I think there's a lot of different reasons for that, Dan, but to me that's where the game has been going for a number of years.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for today. It looks like the weather's going to clear up for you a little bit on the off day here in the Eastern Conference final, and you should be able to enjoy a round of golf or something like that. And but we appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day to help us digest what's happened so far in the playoffs.
Yeah, Sean, thanks. And Dan, thanks. I appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks to Joe so much for joining us. That was great stuff with Joe Micheletti. Again, he's on Sports USA National Radio calling the Eastern Conference Final with John Forslund. So, Sean, we did a lot already on the conference finals. Let's take a look back here. Well, not look back. Let's break down a little bit one team that's no longer playing. The Carolina Hurricanes. I thought that they were going to be in this. You know, I thought that they were going to be a conference final team. I think they thought that they were good enough to be a conference final team. Antti Raanta might have run out of gas, and he certainly ran out of groin. I think that's what it was, you know, in game 7 against the Rangers. But in the end, special teams did them in. I mean, they were 11% on the power play against the Rangers and 66.7% on the PK. You can't do that and win a playoff series. And I don't care if it goes 7 games. Like, you have to be better at special teams than that. That's the breakdown. That's where they have to look. I don't know that you're looking at massive changes in Carolina. I don't know that there's a need for massive changes in Carolina, but they got to look at their special teams and say, that's kind of where it broke down for them.
No more stats, Dan. I thought we established this.
I'm 11%, giving them. You just have to kind of.
They were not good, and they were not good.
They were not good, and they were not good. There you go.
And it killed them, and they still got to 7 games. So, no, I don't think you change anything. Look, the power play kept people up at night, you know, in their breakdown day. You know, Tony D'Angelo said I was tossing and turning. Like, things go off the rails, and you can't get them back no matter how hard you try. Like, if this happened, and it started before the playoffs, so let's not pretend it was a playoff problem. It was a two-month problem.
Right.
But if that 2 months was December and January, nobody would have even raised an eyebrow. But it happened at the worst possible time. But, you know, I look at this Carolina team, and I say they're the Colorado Avalanche. You know, we just talked about Nathan MacKinnon saying, I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of not being good enough. I want to win. Like, that's where the Carolina Hurricanes are. They've taken their medicine. They're all done now. Their core is young. Their core is full of game breakers. They have a defensive structure. They have a legitimate goalie if he can stay healthy, and Freddie Anderson. And they have a great coach. So they have all the pieces there. And I think to do anything with that core would be ill-advised at this point. They do it again next year. And then you say, you know, to me, the only thing that's hard is every time they've lost before this, you're like, oh, well, they should have lost. Like, not should have lost, but there's no shame in losing that series. To me, there's a little shame in losing the Rangers series. I thought they were a better team.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they didn't get it done. And Ian Cole, our good friend who had a huge goal in the playoffs and been on our podcast, said during breakdown day that this one is going to stay with him for a long time, because they were special. It was a special team. It should have played in the Eastern Conference Final. I don't know if it gets out of the Eastern Conference Final to the Stanley Cup, but there's disappointment at the end of this journey for them.
Well, you can't go ahead and lose all your road games, right? Eventually, and expect to win all your home games, because eventually that comes back and bites you. That's number one. Freddie Anderson not being in net, I don't know how much of a factor that was, to be honest with you. I think game 6, Antti Raanta was not good. But that might be the only one where you're like, man, you know, he's playing that way. I thought he was fine. You know, I thought he handled himself well. I don't think goaltending is the reason they lost that series. Obviously, you'd want Freddie Anderson in net if you're Carolina. He was a terrific goalie all year, but Antti Raanta was fine. The one thing for me, Sean, that I look at with the Hurricanes is they have guys who can score. They do. Do they have a game breaker, a speed burning game breaker? They don't, right? You know, maybe that's the one thing that's missing. Of course, how do you get that? You know, I mean, like that's a hard thing to go get, but they don't have that one guy who says, follow me, boys. I'm going to put it on my back right now. Let's go. And not every team has that, but usually the best teams have that one guy. I mean, obviously it's McDavid or Draisaitl in Edmonton. It's McKinnon, sometimes McCarr in Colorado. It's Kucherov, sometimes Hedman, sometimes Stamkos, sometimes Point when he's healthy, you know, in Tampa. For the Rangers, I think we're seeing it with Zibanejad, right? He's that guy that's, you know, saying, let's go. All right, here we go. Aho is really good. Teravainen's really good. Svechnikov might be that guy, but he's not quite there yet for Carolina. And I think that's the next step in his development is really to become that guy. And if he can, that puts them at another level, I think. That's the one. I look at that team. Their defense is strong. Their core is good. They play a real good game. They just don't have that game breaker. But maybe it's Svechnikov, and maybe that's what he develops into next year.
Yeah, and all those players that you mentioned, except for maybe Teravainen, are still growing.
Like, yeah.
They've been at it for years, and we think they're old, and they're not. They're 23, 24. Their prime is still coming. So, again, I think it would be malpractice to mess with what's happening in Carolina. And I know the disappointment has to be bitter, and I know that knee-jerk reaction is, hey, let's change things. The Tampa Bay Lightning didn't change things through all their disappointments, right? The Colorado Avalanche haven't changed things through all their disappointments. Like, this is a hard tournament, right? Think about the teams that are in it and yeah, how much we're praising them. They've won 8 or 9 games.
Yeah.
They have to win 16.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of time for the train to go off the rails here for all these teams that we're celebrating and saying are the elite teams. So this is an incredibly hard tournament to win. And I think the best GMs understand that you have to separate the emotion from the reality, right? And I think the guy who has an even harder problem than Waddell in Carolina, who I think if you're him, you just say, I need to figure out a way to keep this together as much as I can. And I think maybe his biggest decision is, does he go all in on Tony D'Angelo? Because he's not going to play for $1 million again next year.
Right.
And he was really good for them. Is Doug Armstrong in St. Louis, what does he do? David Perron's a free agent. Ryan O'Reilly's in the last year of his contract. Ville Husso's an unrestricted free agent. Binnington's hurt. It's going to be better by the start of the year, but do you get the Binnington of the playoffs and the end of the season, or do you get the Binnington who was lost in the wilderness during the middle of the season at $6 million? That guy isn't going to sleep many nights between now and the draft.
No, you're right. Bozak, too, an unrestricted free agent, not as big of a deal, obviously, as David Perron. 1 year left for Tarasenko. What's going on with Tarasenko? Has the trade happened? Does the trade not happen?
Yeah, Ryan O'Reilly. He said he doesn't want to get rid of him. He said he wants to keep that whole core together. That one's a little tougher, but your window's closing, right? So maybe keep them all together. You think you could have beat Colorado, and if you could have beat Colorado, you could have won the cup. So, and you can't. You got to get O'Reilly done because that guy, to watch that guy play 13 games in a row, playoff games, like, you would have a whole new appreciation for what he does. He could be one of the most complete players and one of the 5 most complete players in the NHL, in my opinion.
And you got to get David Perron done too. I mean, David Perron loves St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know, like he wants to be there, I think. Right. I mean, doesn't he want to be there?
He's come three times. Yeah. No, he wants to be there. He loves it there. His family loves it there, but they've walked away from him numerous times. Like he's one of those guys. He's like your friend that you can call up anytime and be like, hey man, you want to go to a game? And he's like, yeah. But then when you have better options, you're like, oh, I don't need to call him today. I'm going to go with this guy. Like that's kind of what it's been like. Right. Like
it shouldn't be anymore.
No, it shouldn't be. Like, they have the best time with him, and he's fantastic in his personality and everything. He's just a perfect fit there, but he's getting a little bit older, and you wonder when it's going to end and what the term has to be. You know, he wants to stay in St. Louis. Maybe you get a little bit of a friendly deal, but you're still running to the end of the window of where you're comfortable, I think, of having a player like that and thinking he can still score 30 goals.
Well, I think realistically, let's see. You can't really determine where the Blues are going to go from here until we know what the future is with O'Reilly and Tarasenko and Perron, right? I mean, if we're not looking at an extension for O'Reilly and we're not looking at an extension right now for Tarasenko, and maybe Perron signs a short-term deal, you're talking about a one-year window here that's left for this core group, right? But if you're talking extensions for some of these guys, and they're all in their 30s, right? So that's something to monitor as well. Like, you can't go all in on an 8-year deal for Ryan O'Reilly. He's 31 years old, right? I mean, like it's going to be interesting. Or if you're Doug Armstrong, you say, hey, I'm going to sign Ryan O'Reilly to an 8-year deal, and maybe we win the cup one more time in the first 3 or 4 years of that deal, and then I'm gone. I'm not going to be here for the last 4 years of his contract, and somebody else will have to deal with it, right? But you throw up another banner in the, you know, in Enterprise Center, and it makes it all worthwhile, right? So it's going to be interesting. Ville Husso to me is gone. Like I don't see how, unless they can trade Jordan Binnington, but he's going to be harder to trade. It's a long-term deal, $6 million a year, coming off of an injury, right? And I don't think you're going to get the value in a trade for Jordan Binnington that you'd get value for Jordan Binnington when he plays for you in big games, especially. I think Ville Husso is the goalie for the New Jersey Devils or the Buffalo Sabres next year.
He's going to come cheaper. I think you look at his playoff and you wonder if teams started to figure him out a little bit. He gave up a lot of short side goals, a lot of goals. You were like, he really needs to have that. But, you know, last thing about this, and we'll move on to a couple other topics before we get out of here, is, you know, you talk about an 8-year deal for Ryan O'Reilly. And I think if this will become maybe a little bit clearer in the summer, like, I think we're entering a new era, you know, where you look at players and they all come into the league so young now that, you know, some players play forever, but other players are willing to leave when you don't think they're willing to leave. You know, David Krejci left.
Yeah.
And people were like, what? Jordan Staal just came out on breakdown day and said, I don't want an extension. I have 1 year left on my contract. I'm going to play. I'm going to go all in. And then I'm going to decide what I'm going to do. But he did say, I don't want to play for anybody else but Carolina. So it's an extension or it's retiring. Jordan Staal is going to be 35 years old at the end of this contract. He's played 1,200 games.
Yeah, he's played a lot of hockey.
Yeah, no. So, but that's the other side of the 18-year-old coming into the league and being an impact player, is they're done money-wise and physical-wise at 34, 35 years old. And all of a sudden you're looking at a guy and you're like, I got him until 38, 39, you know, the old Zdeno Chara model. And some of these young kids are like, nope. 34, I'm going to get out of this game walking, being with my family, and I got all kinds of bankroll. So I think when you look at franchise players, you can't go into that 38, 39. Like Patrice Bergeron's facing it now. He's got good years left in him, but maybe he doesn't want to play him because it's a huge price to be paid. And again, they come in so early now and they play so many games and there's so much wear and tear that you're not going deep. So I'm curious – as these guys get into the 30s, how many of them are like, I'm going to sign an 8-year deal.
And it's hard. You think about Jordan Staal right now, right? Like he's got to go into a summer. He just played he plays hard minutes. I mean, he's played hard minutes his entire career. Every time he's on the ice, those are hard minutes that he's playing. He's got to go into the summer now saying, I got to get it back up again. You know, there's going to be a point in the summer. I got to get back up training again. I got to do all this. They don't want to do that after a while. You know, it wears on you. So yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be interesting. Like Patrice Bergeron, are you kidding me? He's got like 5 good years left. The guy is so good, you know? So, but, and Jordan Staal can play for a while too, but they say to themselves, I've done what I could. I've had a great career. And he can go be a sod farmer like his dad if he wants to be, right? I mean, that's just, you know, that's what they can do. So it will be interesting. A guy I think would play if he could is Marty St. Louis, though. I think he's a, if he could lace him up and can, and maybe he could lace him up and continue to play in the NHL right now, he would. He's in the Hall of Fame and he just got the full-time job with the Montreal Canadiens. So quickly on Marty St. Louis, Sean, before we get out of here, like I thought he was a revelation in Montreal. And I just, you know, is that a short-term gain or is that something like Marty St. Louis is going to be a long-term fix there for the Carolina, for the Montreal Canadiens? Like, I thought he was a good coach. He did great things with Cole Caulfield. He obviously knows the game. He's invested. There's no question about it, but it's full summer. It's a full training camp. It's a full season. Expectations are going to go up a little bit as they do in Montreal, even if the team isn't picking first in the draft and now, you know, and not expected to win next year. Well, they're getting the number one pick. They're going to get Shane Wright or let's see if I say this name right. Yura Slavkowski. I don't know. Maybe I'm saying it right. Ask Mike Morial, Adam Kimmelman from NHL draft class. They talked to him. Listen to that podcast, by the way. They're going to get a great player. And expectations are going to go up and Marty St. Louis is going to have to deal with that too. He came in and it was just like, all right, let's see what you can do. It's like a trial period, right? Nobody expected anything and they were good, but now it's a little bit different.
Yeah. And he's going to kill it in my opinion.
I think so too.
I look at him and there's two things. Super smart. Like mm-hmm. thinks the game all the time. You were around him, you know, and he just, the reason he was a good player was not because he was physically skilled. It was because he outthought everybody and he outwilled everybody. And I think that's how he's going to approach coaching. And to me, he's like Rod Brind'Amour, like that same kind of coach where it may take him a little while. You know, he has an impact because he sets an example. Like you look at Rod Brind'Amour and how do you not do the work? Like, how do you not? How do you go, I don't feel like it today. I don't feel like going to the weight room. And there's your coach like throwing dumbbells around and, you know, up at 5 a.m. and staying up till 11 o'clock at night. Like that's Marty St. Louis. Like how do you disappoint that guy? And he relates to young kids. He's always been a mentor. He was a mentor with the Rangers when he got traded there. So I think he works great. And as we're doing this, I've thought of a really good idea. I'm going to go to Steve Mayer, our content guru. One year at the All-Star game, we should get all 32 coaches to play East against West in a game, an all-star game, coaches game. And then you could see like Rod Brind'Amour and Marty St. Louis, like, and all the players could see all these coaches that tell them how bad they are. And they could all sit on the bench and heckle them. It'd be awesome.
Rod Brind'Amour and Marty St. Louis coming down on a 2-on-1 against Bruce Boudreau. That would be awesome.
It'd be fantastic.
I don't know if Bruce Boudreau would think that'd be fantastic.
And then you could have a couple of wild cards, right? You could draft in like Marty Brodeur to be the goalie. They would have to be front office guys, but it would be all Joe Sakic.
Joe Sakic,
be
back Steve on Eisenman. Ice,
all those guys. It'd be unbelievable. Steve Yzerman. It'd be fantastic. I'm going to Steve Mayer's office as soon as we get done with this podcast.
All right. Yeah. Let's see what he thinks of that idea. I'm curious. No, look.
They won't do it.
They wouldn't do it. But the comparison of St. Louis to Rod Brind'Amour is a good one. By the way, with Rod Brind'Amour, you know, he's been around a while now. I covered them in the playoffs a couple of times. It still amazes me. After every practice, after every morning skate, I never see a head coach do this. He's the only one. He grabs a bunch of pucks and he drops the puck for the guys practicing their faceoffs. And he must drop 30 pucks for faceoff drills and whatnot. No head coach I have ever seen does that except Rod Brind'Amour. And he drops the puck with intensity, Sean. I'm going to tell you, like, he slams the puck down on the ice. You better be ready to take that face off when Rod Brind'Amour is dropping it. A linesman doesn't drop it hard like Rod Brind'Amour does, but it's a great comparison. And I also heard during the Carolina series that Rod's not even 100% sure how much longer he wants to do this, but he's so intense and he's so invested in the Hurricanes and in this core, and he understands the window is open for them, so he can't leave it now. And I think that's where Marty is. Marty's going to be so invested in building back up the Montreal Canadiens for the fan base that he knows so well because he grew up in it.
And the payoff is huge.
Yeah,
that's the lure in Montreal. It's the lure in Carolina because Rod's been there forever. Look, on breakdown day, Rod Brind'Amour, when it was over, was out on the ice with his kid. Like, he loves hockey. He loves hockey. I would have walked away. I would have been like, how soon can I get to the beach? When's the golf course? And he's out there and skates with his kid, who's a pretty good hockey player from everything I've heard, working with him. So it's just his natural state of being.
Yeah.
And for anybody that's successful, it has to be. It can't be a job. It's a vocation. It's your existence.
Yep. All right. Well, that's I mentioned it before. We definitely go listen to the NHL Draft Class podcast. Those guys, Mike Morreale and Adam Kimmelman, are absolutely killing it at the NHL Combine. So go listen to that. The NHL Awards being announced. The Marc Messier Leadership Award goes to Anze Kopitar. That was announced on Wednesday. Today is Thursday. The Jack Adams Award. The run up to the awards, and there'll be an award show June 21st during the Stanley Cup Final. As well, thank Joe Micheletti. And Sean, how many goals are we going to see in games two of the Eastern Conference and Western Conference? With 22, remember, 22, 11 per game, right? 14 plus 8 equals 22. Divide that by 2, 11 per game. What are you saying for games two?
Dude, you're haunting me. My stats teacher is laughing right now, saying, ha, he's finally got it. I say... Well, there's going to be less in the East, so I'm going to say 18. And all four goalies may play again in the West. So we'll see what happens. But this was great. You know, we talked about Rod Brind'Amour and it being his vocation to do this, his existence. And this is our existence. We live for this. So I'm glad we could do this and we get to do it again next week. And hopefully we're 1/10 as successful as Rod Brind'Amour, because we're certainly not as in shape.
If it's 18... that would be 9 per game. Just letting you know. All right. Just putting that out there for you. So
I should have picked a hard, an uneven number to make it a little harder for you to do the math.
I can do it. I can divide. I can do it. No problem at all. Anyway, enjoy the conference finals. Enjoy the hockey. Thanks for listening.